non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Today's episode is live, and so we're going to be taking your calls in the second half of the show. You can call 866-472-5788 to talk to me and my guest. We often have a disclaimer at the beginning of this show about the frank and explicit nature of our talk on this program. And I want to add an extra one today and a trigger warning for survivors. We're going to be talking about rape and sexual assault in this hour. And while we don't intend to be graphic or gratuitous at all, I want to give you, my listeners, the heads up. My guest today is writer, performer, and activist Jacqueline Friedman, who will join me in a few minutes. I actually first met Jacqueline more than 25 years ago at Wesleyan University in Connecticut, where we were both undergrads. Together, she and I were members of the Student Judiciary Board, which was a board of students and faculty. When a student violated the university's code of conduct, they could be brought before the board, and we would hold a hearing, and we were responsible for determining what action or punishment should be taken. The year we were involved, there were a record number of sexual assault cases on campus. I remember how smart and fierce and just badass Jacqueline was. All those years ago. And her role in campus activism and politics foreshadowed her work as a feminist organizer, a rape survivor advocate, a college lecturer, and a media pundit. Jacqueline Friedman is the co-editor with Jessica Valenti of the hit book Yes Means Yes, Visions of Female Sexual Power and a World Without Rape, which was one of Publisher Weekly's top 100 books of 2009 and number 11 on Ms. Magazine's top 100 feminist nonfiction books of all time. Her new book, What You Really, Really Want, The Smart Girl's Shame-Free Guide to Sex and Safety, was published in November and was recently named a finalist for Forward's Book of the Year Award in Women's Issues. As an undergraduate, Jacqueline thought that she was too smart to become a victim of sexual assault until another student proved her wrong. That experience eventually led her to become a student and instructor of Impact Safety Training. At Impact, she helped bring safety skills to the communities which most need them, including gang-involved high school students and women transitioning out of abusive relationships. Jacqueline's article, Drinking and Rape, Let's Wise Up About It, originally published by Women's E! News in February 2007, was reprinted in several major online outlets and has become a popular reference for new thinking about preventing rape without shaming or blaming women. The article and the public response to it was the inspiration for Yes Means Yes. In 2010, Friedman helped redefine the concept of healthy sexuality with two landmark pieces, The Interview, which has one of the best titles of all time, Fucking While Feminist, and the highly personal polemic, My Sluthood, Myself, which together inspired thousands of responses and explorations across the blogosphere and beyond. Friedman is a popular speaker on campuses and at conferences across the U.S. and beyond. She's been a guest on numerous radio and television shows, and her commentary has appeared everywhere from CNN to the Huffington Post. She is a She Source expert and a Progressive Women's Voices alumna, and was named one of 2009's top 40 progressive leaders under 40 by the New Leaders Council. She is also the founder and executive director of Women, Action, and the Media, a national organization working for gender justice in media. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Jacqueline.
Thanks, Tristan. It has been a long, long journey together, hasn't it?
I know. We've actually not spoken in a really long time. Which seems weird, but okay. So here we go. This is our first time talking, not on email. You know, I have to say, when I read Yes Means Yes, I thought this is a game changer. It really is. And so tell me a little bit about the essay that sparked the idea for the book.
Sure. I mean, that essay was sparked by kind of an internet kerfuffle in the feminist blogosphere that happened a month or two before then. Women's E! News, which is supposed to be a feminist news outlet, published a piece called, I think it was called Young Women Sidle Up to Barroom Risks, something like that. And there's a picture of like a young woman sidling up to those barroom risks. And it was all about how women get lured in by ladies' night deals for drinks, and then they get themselves raped. And it left out the idea of a rapist, right? The idea of somebody perpetrating these rapes. And it was nothing new in the sense that we had all read this stuff before, but it was shocking that even on a feminist website in what was then, I don't know, 2006 or 2007, that this was still sort of the party line. And the listserv actually that I run for Women Action in the Media for WAM exploded with dialogue about it. And some of the members were like, well, we have to be practical and warn women. And some folks were really fed up. And I wound up on the phone with Rita Henley Jensen, who's the editor-in-chief at Women's E! News. And we sort of hashed it out some, and she was like, I really want you to write a response, which is how that piece came to be. And I didn't think that much of it at the time, just was glad to be able to get a counter narrative out there. But when it hit, it just blew up. And I'd done a lot of speaking over the years as a rape survivor and as an advocate for rape survivors, but I hadn't done it in the internet age, and it was shocking to me how invested a loud, probably small portion of the population online was in denying any responsibility for rape other than the one pinned on the victim. And in my case, they made up details out of whole cloth. They were like, I looked this up, the police reports for this, and they say this and that. Well, I never reported to the police. So it was just shockingly controversial to me. I didn't feel like I was saying anything terribly controversial. And that is what gave rise to the idea that we really needed a book, because these ideas that I put forth in that article weren't brand new and they weren't all original to me. There was a conversation already happening in the blogosphere, in some parts of the feminist blogosphere about it. And so Jessica and I really started talking about how we needed to bring that dialogue that was happening in kind of our tiny corner of the world into a much broader audience.
Right. And so it's interesting because it's almost like in that piece, the piece that you responded to, it was as if drinking was the new low-cut dress. It's like the next thing that women are responsible for their own sexual assaults. We were either wearing a low-cut dress or we were drunk or maybe both, which is like, you know, now you have double the chances.
Exactly. Exactly. And then maybe you're a woman of color or maybe you're a sex worker. I mean, it goes on from there. The further away you get from that sort of the ideal of the perfect victim, and let's face it, none of us can live up to that ideal, the more you're at fault for your own violation.
Right. And so in the essay, you laid out three really clear strategies. You said, hey, while we're blaming women for drinking, why don't we hold boys and men accountable for their drinking as well? Provide girls and women with strategies for protecting themselves from rape and teach widespread effective self-defense skills to women and girls. I'm wondering, 5 years out from that piece that you wrote, which was so pivotal, would you add to those strategies or change them at all? And are we now in a different place 5 years later?
I think it's starting to change. I do travel around to a lot of college campuses in North America, and yes means yes is a key part of the messaging on almost every campus I go to. So the basic principle of enthusiastic consent, which I don't know if you want me to explain or if your listeners are going to be already familiar with.
Let's talk about what enthusiastic consent is.
Okay, so the idea of enthusiastic consent is that it's not enough to just say, oh, well, my partner didn't say no or didn't say no loud enough or didn't fight me hard enough, right? That the onus is on each of us as sexual adults to make sure that our partner is not just laying there not objecting, but is actively participating, is actively into whatever is happening. This it shouldn't be a terribly hard burden for those of us who enjoy having sex with people who are into having sex with us.
Right.
But it does get a lot of people up in arms. And that's really the heart of yes means yes. So I feel like that has shifted. But we see this victim blaming stuff happen over and over again. I mean, that's what the slut walks were formed last year in response to. It was that same line over again. And I would say, actually, if you ask me what I would change from that piece, I went back and read it in preparation for this interview, is I would put less emphasis even on number two, which is, sure, talk to women about the risks of drinking. Because I feel like the more I've researched it and talked to women, everybody already knows, right? Like, it's not I ask these audiences of young women and men all the time, like, how many of you know the rules for women to not get raped? And before I don't even have to explain what I'm talking about, everyone knows what I'm talking about. We've all absorbed them from when we were 2 years old. So it's not happening because women haven't been adequately terrified, right? It's happening because women should have the same right to pursue pleasure and fun as men do, and it's not women's fault. And I also think that it's one thing as a mother or a best friend to like look out for your friend and say, hey, it's not fair, but don't get too drunk because I worry about you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's as a public health message, it doesn't do anything, right? Because there's always going to be, if a perpetrator is looking for a drunk victim, all that does is mean it's not going to be you. It's going to be somebody else. It doesn't reduce rape at all, right?
Right?
It just shifts blame. So it's not actually, as a public health message, effective at all to tell women to watch their drink.
And also, it doesn't say anything to men. It says you're allowed to go out and have a good time and get as drunk as you want. And there's no warning there for them.
Exactly. And we know from research that when alcohol is involved in sexual violence, it's just about even odds that the perpetrator was drinking as the victim. But you never hear like, men, don't go out and drink too much, so much that you can't tell whether or not your partner is consenting. Like, when have you ever heard that education message? Until recently. I do think I see that happening on some campuses I visit now.
So give me an example of some better activism on campuses. But actually, hold that thought.
Okay.
We are going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about these college lectures that Jacqueline Friedman gives and some of the things she's learned about how rape prevention education has shifted for young people. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans, just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Yes, you can send me an email. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. You can also call us because we are live with Jacqueline Friedman. So after the next break, we are going to take your calls. You can call us at 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on our Twitter page at Sex Out Loud Radio or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. All of these ways to get in touch with us. So before the break, we were talking about going to college campuses. You do a lot of lecturing, and you have seen a shift in some cases around rape prevention education. I was wondering if you could give me like a concrete example of that, where the message has changed.
Sure. I know that Duke a year or two ago actually put affirmative consent in their code of conduct, and more schools are doing this now. So the legal version of enthusiastic consent is affirmative consent because it's hard to legislate enthusiasm. But it does say you have to have gotten active consent. It's not just enough to note the lack of protest. So some schools are doing it sort of legislatively in their code of conduct, which is great because that means that becomes a community value that gets taught to all the incoming classes from there on out, right? You have to know what the code of conduct says. Other schools are doing more direct action. Dickinson, I take a tiny bit of credit for this. 2 weeks after I visited Dickinson last year, they took over an administration building and had a four-day sit-in with a whole list of demands to changes of the way that sexual assault was adjudicated on campus, and they got most of their demands.
Wow.
And then they're sort of, they are incredible. Badass activists at Dickinson. I'm so proud of them. And then there's also the creative approach. So after Yes Means Yes came out, a student at Colgate did a thesis project where she turned it into a 6-week student-run curriculum, and Colgate, God bless them, took it and actually enacted it. So volunteer, well-trained students with faculty supervision every semester do this 6-week course based on the book Yes Means Yes, our book, and really lead the students through the process of understanding and grappling with the ideas in the book. And there's a wait list for it every season, which is so cool.
Well, that's incredible. And I feel like your new book, because I want to get to your new book.
Yeah.
I feel like your new book takes this to an even more personal level. I got to read an advanced copy, but now it's out and everyone can read it at bookstores everywhere. It's called What You Really, Really Want. And the thing that struck me is that I, as a sex educator, am constantly trying to encourage people to embrace their authentic desires and to become these empowered sexual beings. And this book, I feel like, takes that theory and some of the practice and takes it a step further. I mean, there are so many specific, useful, hands-on tools to help girls and women navigate the complicated world of sexuality. I feel like you bust all these myths and you shred these double standards about female sexuality, and you really call out to the mat this hypocrisy and this misogyny and all this sex negativity in our culture. And so for me, this book is like a handbook. It's like a handbook I want to give every woman, every young girl in my life, and say, before you have sex with anyone except yourself, please read this and do all the exercises in it. I mean, it's the kind of book, frankly, I wish I had when I was becoming sexually active. Is that part of what motivated you to write it? Is it a book you wished you had?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I like to call it The Hitchhiker's Guide to Your Sexuality.
That's good. That's good.
Thanks. It kind of caught on, but I'm working on it. I'm still trying. Really, I was inspired by so many young women that I met when we did the book tour for Yes Means Yes, who said to me, I love the idea about enthusiastic consent. I really love what you're doing with this book. How do you know what you want to say yes to? Like, I don't know what I want to say yes to. How did you figure it out? And I realized after I heard a different version of that question over and over again, I came to realize a couple of things. The first one is, it's not an accident that we don't know, right? That we live in a culture that is important, fundamental parts of it are built on the idea that female sexuality is not for women, right? It's for men, it's for government institutions, it's for churches, it's for everybody else to know what to do with except us, right?
Right.
We see that playing out in current politics right now. So it's nobody's, it's not your fault, right? If you're a woman and you feel like, I don't know what I want for my sexuality, first of all, that's not a character flaw. That's on purpose. Somebody's, you know, the culture has done that to you. The second is that I knew how to talk about it. Like, I realized that I could answer that question, but I couldn't answer it in 5 minutes at a Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started really thinking about what were the things that I'd had to really turn around on, and what are the processes I went through to turn around on those ideas and to unpack all that crap that I got sold growing up. And that's where the book came from. And then the third thing is, and I really came to understand this as I was writing the book, is that doing this work, doing this deeply personal work of getting in touch with what you actually want for or from your sexuality is a profound act of political resistance, because we live in that culture that doesn't want you to know. But it feels like it's a really personal book. And I sort of hesitated at first when I had the idea, because I'm not a big self-help person. And this is essentially a self-help book.
Oh, yeah,
but most
definitely.
Most self-help books sort of take a systemic, a structural, cultural problem and tell you it's your individual fault and you have to figure out what to do about it. You have to fix it because there's something wrong with you. And this book, instead of that, says, actually, there's nothing at all wrong with you, and you really already do know all the answers in there. There's something wrong with the culture, and let's figure out how to navigate it together.
Yeah.
And
navigate some of the contradictions. I think that's what also comes through in this book, is that there's so many contradictions. And all this sort of like, you need to be sexy, Britney Spears in a Catholic schoolgirl skirt. But then people I know who are 19 and 20 who don't know how their clitoris works. It's all these contradictions, and also this idea of keeping female sexuality a kind of a mystery, even from people whose sexuality it is.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a way in which the various forces that are invested can control us, right? Because we feel insecure, we feel unsure, and they try to sell us the answers, whether that's the government or politicians or churches or advertisers and media or whoever it is, or individuals. And I will say, the double standard stuff is exactly, when you look at it, it's so revealing of what the agenda is, right? So I all the time get called both a prude and a slut.
Ooh, isn't that great? What an accomplishment.
Which I think is really fascinating. So I get called a prude when I talk about enthusiastic consent. I get told that I'm asking too much and I don't understand how real sex works. And I've obviously never had really, you know, fun, spontaneous, rough and tumble sex.
People
right?
do the same thing to me. They tell me I'm not spontaneous because I believe in consent. I'm like, guys, spontaneity and consent are not opposites.
No, you just have to actually know how to communicate in
the
moment.
Exactly.
We have this weird catch-22 in the sexual culture where we're supposed to talk about and think about sex all the time, except you're never supposed to talk about it with the person you're actually having sex with. Makes me crazy.
But then
I also get called a slut because I say that women should be able to have sex on their own terms, whatever those terms are, right? And those aren't always sort of monogamous romantic relationships.
Yeah.
And I've talked publicly about the fact that those haven't always been my choices.
Let's talk about sluts, because sluts have been in the news lately.
I will, but I want to finish making a point about the double standard.
Go.
My point about it is just that if I can simultaneously be a slut and a prude, that that's all you need to know, right? All that means is that both of those terms mean the same thing, which is you're not acting according to somebody else's agenda.
Right. You've stepped outside the box and
right.
you're not behaving. Yeah. And also that dichotomy, I mean, it goes back to the sort of Madonna whore dichotomy. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's old puritanical bullshit.
Deep.
That we're still hanging on to, that's sort of still in our collective subconscious, and says you have to be both and neither, which is
yes.
doesn't really leave us a lot of room to be anything.
You have to be both and neither. That is exactly correct, which means you cannot exist.
And so you wrote this great piece about your sluthood in on Jezebel, I remember. And it was about embracing casual sex after a breakup. I mean, it was totally relatable. And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the slut walks, on this reclamation of the term slut. You know, one of the things that I find over and over on college campuses is that there are girls out there and young women who want to explore themselves, maybe who want to have multiple sex partners, and there's sort of no word for them except slut.
Slut.
And if they don't want to reclaim slut, if slut really just feels too heavy with baggage and crap, what do we call a woman, which I like to call, with a robust sex life?
We call her a woman. You know, like,
right?
Why do we have to put her in a category?
Well, I want some language that's not negative to describe a sexually empowered woman. I that's what I want. I want a word that says, oh, you're that, that doesn't have these negative connotations, because I feel like all we have is slut and whore.
Well, I think that there's a difference between a sexually empowered woman and a woman who has a lot of sex partners. They may be one and the same thing, but there are a lot of ways to be sexually empowered. You may be sexually empowered to decide that, you know, not no sex at all is the right answer for you, and that might be a really empowered decision.
Of course.
But I don't have a word. I don't have a word other than slut, which I know not everybody wants, and I really don't think everyone needs to be able to accept. And I think that was really the challenging thing about the slut walks was it wasn't a place that felt comfortable for everybody. So I felt like it was a really powerful grassroots response that grew up, you know, in Toronto, that grew out in response to something that happened in Toronto. And I spoke at the Boston Slut Walk and had an amazing time, but I also really heard from a lot of women, and especially women of color, who said, this does not feel okay to me. I don't want even to stand in solidarity. Cause I felt like the slut walks were all about sort of an I am Spartacus moment, right? And I talked about this in my speech from the Boston Slut Walk, which is like, if you're going to call one of us a slut, then we're all sluts.
Right.
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 And that, you know, like, I'm a slut, you're a slut. Doesn't matter what we're doing, their sexual bodies, right? Like, let's just all be, you know, it's a moment of political solidarity. But in reality, I'm coming from a position of multiple privileges with that, and that's just not going to work for everybody. So we do need multiple approaches.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take another break. Remember, after the break, we're going to take your calls. So if you've got questions or comments for Jacqueline Friedman, you can call us at 866-472-5788, or you can post questions on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. And we're going to hear from some of our fabulous sponsors, including the Smitten Kitten, a progressive sex toy store for everybody, specializing in high-quality sex toys and supplies. Check them out at smittenkittenonline.com and use the coupon code TRISTAN for 20% off. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe, share the play. pleasure.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone. My guest today is activist, feminist author, college speaker, and general badass, Jacqueline Friedman. And we are talking about rape prevention and sexual empowerment. We're also taking your calls. So give us a call at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. So, Jacqueline, I wondered what your thoughts were on the recent brouhaha that ensued when Michigan State Representative Lisa Brown said vagina.
Vagina!
During a debate, which was about, by the way, not new roads and bridges. It was actually a debate about abortion and new abortion restrictions on the Michigan House floor, and she was banned by Republican leaders from speaking again. What do you think? A lot has been written about this, and there have been some incredible actions against it, but does part of you...
They did the vagina monologue.
They did.
Those steps, which
I know.
Is amazing.
I mean, what are the implications that it's 2012 and lawmakers are banning people and the people who say the word vagina from... from politics, from the government?
You know, there's not a lot that I can specifically say about this incident that hasn't already been said. Obviously, it's so telling, right, that these men want to be able to legislate what we can and cannot do with our vaginas without allowing us to talk about it, right? That's been completely clear, whether it was a congressional hearing about contraception that had no women at it, that Sandra Flick was excluded from, which started that whole Rush Limbaugh, Sandra Flick slut controversy. There's that word again.
Right.
Everywhere you see this, I think that in some perverse way, I find it refreshing. And I will tell you why. I bet that's not what you thought I was going to say.
That is not what I thought you were going to say.
I find it refreshing because these men, these politicians, have had this agenda for a long time. And for some reason, the right has gotten so extreme that they now feel free to talk about it. But it's not that they have suddenly developed this perspective, right? And this goes to the contraceptive stuff especially, and these draconian abortion laws that we're seeing passed in states all around the country at astonishing rates. When we should be, you know, when all these politicians who say they want to do jobs, well, you know, then they're looking in our vaginas for them, evidently. And putting abortion providers out of work. I don't know how that produces jobs.
Exactly.
So I think that in some way it means now we can finally have this conversation, right? We can be like, see, this is what the conversation is that we're having, instead of having it in these sort of sideways code word ways where they try and look like the good guys. Like, they're not trying anymore. I remember in one of the Republican primary debates, Ron Paul, they were talking about contraception, and they were all sort of saying, like, yes, can't have any of that. And Ron Paul said, you know, it's not the pill that's the problem. It's the women using the pill that are the problem.
This is like, guns don't kill people. People with guns kill people.
Yes, except we're talking about contraception.
Yeah, it's people who take the pill that we need to eradicate from the planet. Jeez.
So in some ways, like, at least then you have a starting place to say, like, okay, let's do this.
Right. Well, and I do think it's been so outrageous that it really has rallied the movement. I mean, wouldn't you say it's breathed new life into the feminist movement, especially young feminists?
Absolutely. If you saw the response to the Komen thing, trying to run Planned Parenthood, was one of the most beautiful pieces of activism I've seen in so long. And all the responses to Rush Limbaugh's attempts to sort of slut shame Sandra Fluke was the same thing. The activism, you know, the number of advertisers he lost over that was meaningful, and people see that.
Finally, he was sort of called out as the crazy lunatic that he is. I mean, that it's like, oh, okay, Rush, we've supported you up to a point, but that is just ridiculous. Now we've got to go. Yeah. And so I feel like he was revealed for, you know, his true beliefs, which are completely insane.
We are and have been for a long time.
Right. Well, I want to play a clip from your speech at a rally in Boston, a rally against the war on women, happened back in April. This is one of my favorite pieces from it. So let's take a listen.
Standing up, really standing up, means going beyond responding to the terms of the debate. It means defining them. It means not struggling so hard for marriage equality that we have no bandwidth left to question the institution of marriage.
Yeah.
For that matter, it means not putting all of our eggs into the gay isn't a choice, that's why we should have rights basket. Instead, insisting that those of us who do deliberately choose to live queer lives deserve rights too.
Damn right.
While we're shouting loudly and repeatedly that using birth control doesn't make us sluts or prostitutes, let's yell even louder that there's not a damn thing wrong with being either or both.
Yeah!
When we spend all time just fighting to keep agencies like Planned Parenthood funded, we forget to ask more fundamental questions like, why is basic health care for half the population treated as a nicety a private charity can provide if it feels so moved? Why is women's health care, and yes, I include in that abortion care and contraception access, why is it optional? Why is it a niche industry? We need to stand up and say no more. Women's health care is health care.
Yeah!
Period.
Ooh, gives me chills. It rallies me up even when I'm just sitting here in the studio thinking about it. I mean, there's so many good things in that piece. That's why I picked it. But I especially think this idea that everything that should be just part of healthcare has been kind of put to the side as this specialized thing, like breast cancer screening. Let's make that a specialized thing. And birth control. I mean, it's like, why is Viagra covered by health insurance and birth control isn't? Why can you go into any pharmacy in America and get Viagra, but you can't go into any pharmacy in America and get birth control because people can turn you away just based on their own convictions? I put that in quotes. I mean, where do you think this is headed?
Well, you know, I wrote a piece for Good online about four lessons that we can learn from the Hunger Games for the war on women. And one of them was that even well-intentioned paternalism is dangerous. And what I was thinking of when you were talking about, you know, going into the pharmacy is also emergency contraception and how Obama decided that it shouldn't be available to teenagers under 18 because he has daughters. Right? And he's like, I'm just being a loving father. You know, like, how is that being a loving father? And what does it have to do with policy? Like, what you want your girls to do shouldn't be what everybody has to do, right? Like, we don't need a father in chief. But it is that paternalism. I do think that I think we're heading to more and more balkanized positions. It's a little nerve-wracking, but I do think that you're right, that it's inspiring a lot more activism. And I think that where I'd like to see the conversation head is a real national conversation about sex education. Because until we change the way that sex is taught and talked about in public schools, we're never going to change this narrative, right? It's always going to be assumed to be true that a woman who wants to own her sexuality and is unapologetic about it can be called a slut, right? And you could have that up off of the pass in fifth grade, but we're too squeamish to do it as a culture. And what's more, that's very fear-based in the sense that most parents, when you look at surveys, I was just talking to a woman who's trying to institute a more comprehensive sex ed in North Carolina, who said that even when they poll in like the most conservative districts, the majority are in favor of basic comprehensive sex ed, but they're afraid to speak up because they think they're the minority. Right.
Well, so, and I think that, you know, why that they're in favor of it is because I think, you know, truthfully, a lot of parents feel embarrassed, intimidated, or entirely unequipped to talk about this with their kids. So they're actually happy if public school teacher takes over who has credentials to do this and who has a master's degree in human sexuality. They're happy for those folks to take over and they'll sign the permission slip. But though that isn't the curriculum that A is being funded or B that's happening in our schools.
I was just going to say, like, that even in the schools where certain points are mandated, like you have to do the condom demonstration, like it's being taught by the gym teacher who has no training. There's no money behind this. What kind of sex did that gym teacher get, right? Like, what are their belief system? Like, do they think vaginas are icky? Like, they're going to communicate that while they're teaching this lesson. So it really, it's an actual infrastructure change that needs to happen in the way we deal with sex in the culture.
And I don't know how that is going to happen when we still have millions and millions of dollars going to abstinence-only education.
I know. That Obama was supposed to zero out ab-only funding, but then he just approved that terrible project, the name of which is escaping me. But
the Heritage Keepers.
Yes. The Heritage Keepers. You know, yeah. I feel like if I just had put words together at random, I might have come up with the Heritage Keepers.
Yeah. well, you know what I'm wondering is, even if you can do this in one quick minute, but if our listeners are angry and outraged, and I hope they are, I hope I have the kind of listeners who want to, you know, put down the computer and act, or maybe stay on the computer and act, what do you think people should be doing to shift this, to actually demand better sex education?
Okay, I'll try to be fast. The first thing they should do is vote and let people know that this is an issue that they're voting on, that this is an issue that sways their vote. Let their politicians know, right? That's the number one thing. And start at the local level. Two is we have to support the institutions that are filling in the gaps right now. And I have to here give a shout out to scarlatine.com, which is where so many of the young people who aren't getting proper sex education are going in search of actual honest to God, shame-free sex education. And then also check out organizations like Advocates for Youth and Answer, who are advocating and working on the political front to move the needle on that. So those are some things that listeners can do.
Okay. We're going to have all links to all those on our website. And I'll tell you more about that at the end of the show. We're going to take another break. If you want to join the conversation, call us at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
The experts. Call toll free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from the Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
We are back, and I also want to give a shout out to two of my other sponsors, WeVibe, the world's best-selling couples vibrator. Go to we-vibe.com to find out all about it. And Astroglide Personal Lubricants. Astroglide makes sex better. Get a free sample, find out how at astroglide.com. We are back talking to Jacqueline Friedman, and I hear we have a caller on the line.
Hi, it's Cooper.
Wow, that was quite explosive. You may recognize Cooper's voice. Cooper's calling from Chicago, but he's also the official announcer of the show. So, Cooper.
I wasn't going to call attention to it, but since you did, yes.
Well, I think they'd recognize your voice, Cooper.
Yeah, probably. So, I had a thought.
Okay.
That, you know, while I was listening to this, and it's, you know, I'm from the non-monogamous community, specifically the swing community, which is a lot about exploring, you know, the sexuality you really want. And I think a lot of what I see is the problem is, by and large, our country is afraid of their own sexuality. They're afraid to scooch out into any other form of sexuality than what they've seen on television as fine. You know, and because of that fear, they don't want to teach their kids anything that might be a little different. And I see it in my community, too, in the swinging community. It was up until just recently just very taboo to be a bisexual male even. So, you have all these people who are trying very hard to repress their own sexual urges, and that comes out really strongly in, well, I'm going to try to repress everybody else's sexual urges as well.
Yeah, I think the media is a huge part of the echo chamber, and Tristan said earlier, you know, you have to be, if you're a woman, you have to be a sort of a Madonna and whore, not the whore Madonna, the virgin Madonna, and you have to be both and neither, right? And I think men get put in really narrow boxes in the culture too, and of course, male and female, the binary is a narrow box to begin with. I think the problem is that everyone is afraid to be first. And I liken it, I think a lot about the strides that the GLBT, sort of to a lesser extent in terms of where they're at and where they want to be, communities' efforts for civil rights in this country over the last 20 years, and how so much of it was motivated by coming out, right?
Yes.
And that the earlier people coming out were taking much greater risks and faced much real backlash. I mean, people coming out now do also still face real consequences depending on all manner of factors, but there are also a lot more places where it's okay to come out than there were 20 years ago.
Okay.
think that we, let me just finish. I think that what we need is an analogous sort of sexual coming out movement in the culture, that we need to all, those of us who can, need to start just talking about this stuff in public. That's why I wrote My Sluthood Myself, not because I wanted the entire internet, including my mother, to know my business, because honestly, I'm kind of a private person and I don't, but because I'm in a position where I knew the consequences wouldn't be that great, and because I can, I think it really is a moral and political obligation.
And that's something we struggle with a lot personally and in my little subset of the community. I came out to my brother last week because of Tristan's keynote speech at OpenSF last weekend. It was so necessary that I do something. It was so necessary that I help to normalize it. And I think you guys mentioned I Am Spartacus. It's the first three guys to stand up and say they're Spartacus. That's the hard ones. It's when everybody else starts standing up, then it becomes easier and easier.
And well, and I also think Cooper, just to interrupt, I also think we, you know, as the three of us have different privileges, each of us, some of which overlap, and we have to use those positions of privilege to come out because there are people who can't right now.
Right.
And I don't need everyone to stand up and claim their sluthood or their sexual empowerment if that's going to really, you know, really impact their survival on some basic level. But if we have the privilege, I think we need to use the privilege, because the more we do, the more we speak out, the more we make it safer for others when they're ready to do the same.
Right.
You know, getting back to the sex ed conversation.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Getting back to the sex ed conversation, I was recently at Netroots Nation and heard Kara Johnson from Choice USA, another great organization, speak about sex ed. And someone asked her sort of, what can we do to move the needle on it? And she said, if you can be the person, the parent or aunt or whoever in your community who can be the out sex positive person in your like school district, right? Be the person who opens the conversation. Because again, I think most of America, just like most of the world, all of us have any kind of rainbow of proclivities that we may think are weird and certainly don't see reflected in our everyday lives in terms of the media and the public discourse. I think that's probably more common than not. It's probably less common to be someone whose sexuality is completely in line with the public discourse, right?
Right.
But because of that silence, everyone thinks they're the only one.
Right.
Well, that was something we encountered when we came out as non-monogamous to our friends, is we became the go-to people when they were having monogamous questions about sex and expanding their horizons. They asked us because we're clearly the perverts. So we might have the
but
answers.
If you wear that sticker proudly, and I wear it too, I think you're right, Jacqueline. I think if you can be that person who questions why the sex education isn't comprehensive, who stands up, who makes a fuss. Not all of us can stand up and make a fuss, but those of us who can have to, is what I'm hearing you say.
It makes it easier for people to stand up next to you if you're the first one.
Right.
And maybe you can be the second one or the third one, right, if you can't be the first one. It's just whenever we can be out, and we all have to make those calculus for ourselves, right? I'm not going to stand in judgment on anybody else's calculus, right? But whenever we can, it really does make a difference. I was overwhelmed by the response to My Sluthood Myself. It was like nothing else I'd ever published. And it was because it was over and over again people saying, oh my God, thank you for saying this out loud. I thought I was the only one. And honestly, I didn't talk about anything that out. I mean, I guess I talked about hooking up on Craigslist is the most outre thing I said on there, you know, like
it just dates the piece. That's all.
I know exactly.
Because we now know we're not supposed to do that anymore. No, but I think what it did, and I think what this book did, even for me as someone who isn't necessarily the sort of target audience for your new book, there's so much in it that resonates. And that's what the Sluthood piece did. It resonated with an entire community of women from all over the world who said, oh my God, I really thought that I was weird or I was a pervert or I wasn't normal because I really identify with this.
And you know, when I had this think tank of volunteers workshop every chapter in the new book, And we had sort of 50-50 women who thought they felt weird because they weren't sexual enough or weren't experienced enough, and that made them feel other, and women who felt like they were too slutty or perverted. And it was amazing to see them talk to each other about it and realize that we're all made to feel other one way or the other.
Thank you so much for the work you do. Jacqueline Friedman's latest book is What You Really, Really Want, The Smart Girl's Shame-Free Guide to Sex and Safety, published by Seal Press, available at bookstores everywhere. You can find out more about her and get in touch with her at jacquelinefriedman.com or the site for the book, which is whatyoureallyreallywant.net. That's all we have time for, unfortunately, but I want to thank my guest. I want to thank my first virgin caller, Cooper, for joining the conversation. Tune in next week when my guest will be writer, editor, and erotica rock star, Rachel Kramer Bussell. We'll talk about kinky erotica, hotel sex, and 50 Shades of Grey. Until then, find me on facebook.com/AskTristan or on Twitter at SexOutLoudRadio. Take some time this week to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.